Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and guess what? I have an amazing show for you today, a great group of guests for you today. So what I want you to do is to go ahead and get your pens, get your paper out, whatever it is that you use to take notes, whether that's your phone, your laptop, your computer, whatever it is. If you got to get those sticky notes and those crayons, I need you to go ahead and grab them because I guarantee that you are going to be taking some notes today. Just talking to our guests backstage, I am ready for the show to get started. But before I do that, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that's right. Go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. Why would they? Why would you? We have so much fun here. But I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. Her name is Holly Green. And Holly helps you leverage your brain and the brains of others to be more successful. Good morning, Holly Green. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. I love your background. And sometimes I play my own little game on the show. That's my I spy with my little eye. But I spy a book in the background and it kind of looks like you.
Yes, with perfect lighting and makeup and hair,
I
right?
know the feeling.
That is my latest book called Using Your Brain to Win. And we published that just a couple of years ago. That was the fourth or fifth book. And very exciting. It's got 33 different neuro prompts or ways to use your brain to be even more incredible than you already are at work.
Okay, so you're one of those people who, I don't know if it's a belief or who says that we only use a certain percentage of our brain. Is that correct?
We use 100% of our brain. The myth that we only use 10% is one of the greatest myths about the human brain. Even when you're sleeping, the synapses are occurring in your brain at 90% the same rate as when you're awake. So that sucker is on for you 24/7, 365.
That's what I wanted to know, because I always heard that we only use like 1% of our brains.
Yeah, no, it was a good movie. Morgan Freeman's voice was incredible in it. I think it was called Lucy, but you can't take a pill and use more of your brain. You're already using it. Hopefully, you're using it well. That's the key.
Yes, but in your book, you help us with ways to use it even better. What are some of the main topics or things that we should focus on in order to have better brain power?
First of all, just understanding how and why you think the way you do and get to the behavior you get to. What's the mental pathway that you take and the mental pathways others take? And understanding our biases, assumptions, opinions, beliefs, our experiences, all those things that drive us to go down the same pathways over and over and over again, even when it might not be working as well for us. We're constructed to do that. And then once you have some self-awareness, you can build on that and play with your brain, change perspective, challenge assumptions, stage your field of vision. There's all sorts of really interesting and cool things you can do with your brain to expand your ability to ponder possibilities, options, and alternatives.
Wow, I love it. I'm definitely going to have more questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest with such a beautiful name as well, Miss Holly Jean Jackson. So Holly Jean helps entrepreneurs and business leaders love their life and their business again. Good morning, Holly Jean. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you so much for having us.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining me. I have to be Holly Jean and Holly, so I have to be clear. But Holly Jean, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. So, my name's Holly Jean Jackson. I'm a business coach and as well as an executive coach. I work with people who are trying to build or scale their business or career. I do this by helping them move their business online for the entrepreneurs and business owners out there, and for the executives, I help you really hone in your leadership skills. What's something that's particularly unique to me as a business and executive coach is that I work across three foundational areas. So I help you with your health, your clarity, and your business, because if you don't have a really solid foundation in health, you won't have the energy to build the business or career that you dream of. If you don't have the clarity, you're likely in the wrong career or building the wrong business that would support your life priorities. And then on the business end, I help people with their PR, their marketing, as well as scaling things online and offline.
That's wonderful. One of the things that I saw during the global pandemic is many businesses make that pivot between just being a brick and mortar and actually having an online presence, or people who may have had a website, but they didn't actually have any e-commerce aspect to it, which means that the customers weren't able to actually buy online. It was more like informational only is here so that we have an actual website. Were you working with businesses during this time frame to be able to make that transition? And did you see a lot more of that?
Absolutely. I was supporting several local chambers in California to help business owners make that pivot and help them really scale their business to a more sustainable set point so that they could re have recurring income and be more risk adverse for situations like a pandemic. And I'd say 90% of my clients over the last few months have been mostly to optimize their online portion of the business, how they can build really amazing relationships and customer experiences in really unique ways online.
Do you have any, can you give us any like short or a few tips in order to have a successful business online?
Yeah. So one of them
Strategy.
is you really want to have an optimal online presence and really clarify your brand across LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and you really want to research the marketing avenues that you're utilizing so that you're not wasting time in the wrong areas. So make sure that you're optimizing your online presence, you're researching the areas that you're using in social media appropriately for your client avatar or your ideal client space. Also, make sure you find an amazing web designer and somebody who really understands e-commerce and they're not overselling you on what you need. Sometimes you simply just need a Stripe setup or something integrated. And then sometimes you really do need a WooCommerce platform or a more advanced e-commerce shopping cart. So make sure you do the research on that.
Yes, and then come to people like Holly Jean to ask if we're unsure. That's the beauty of having people who you can ask questions from if you don't know, which brings me to our next guest who has a whole industry that I didn't even know existed, but she is a lactation consultant and she helps people with questions on lactation. Good morning, Leanne O'Connor. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. It's really cool to be with this group of people, because not only am I a clinician, a healthcare provider, I'm also a business person because I am a private practice lactation consultant, and so I'm doing all the stuff, like I'm doing all the marketing, I'm doing the business end of it, and I'm also a mentor in my field. One of the pathways to become a lactation consultant is to get clinical hours, and that's something that I offer. So that's part of my business as well. And but when you boils down to it, it's about getting babies fed, and it's a very, very complex field. It's complex because it involves people in a very intimate setting, in a very personal setting, and a very primal, vulnerable setting. And so having to navigate with all different personalities and all the social issues that get in the way of breastfeeding or just infant feeding, it's very complex. And I'm somebody who can go to a cocktail party and turn any conversation into breastfeeding because it kind of boils down to that. I mean, just listening to
Is that like a gift? I didn't mean to interrupt, but it was just like the way you said it. Like I could go to any cocktail party. I'm like, that must be interesting because I don't know what to make of it if I'm having a conversation now, all of a sudden we're talking about lactation.
it just often happens organically. And so sometimes it will start with, oh, what do you do? And when I say I'm a lactation consultant, I can almost tell. Not always, but almost tells people's experiences with feeding babies, with breasts. Breasts are like, oh my gosh, don't talk about breast or don't show your breast. And like people's discomfort with the human body and people's discomfort with babies. And or I can hear, oh, I loved breastfeeding. It was the best thing I ever did. And you hear so many different scenarios, and you might just hear somebody talking. Just talking about the workplace and women having to go back to work so fast and not having the equipment and the support. Was really it's the support in our social structure of how we can support babies getting fed. I mean, I can go off on, I could steal this whole talk for 2 hours nonstop about this. So interrupt me at any point.
I heard you. You said I could steal this entire hour, this entire show. That's okay. Believe me, I'm good at what I do. I'm good at jumping in there and going, okay. You know what? Let me introduce my next guest, Mr. James Lambridis. And we're talking about his business, DebtMD. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great, Sharifa. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How do you feel being surrounded by all these ladies?
I love it. It's great.
I always tell people I've done one show that has 5 men on it, just one show. And it's always women because they tell me women are talkers, that we love to talk. And men are like, I don't really have much to say. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. But we're talking a little bit about medical aspects. So tell us about yourself, James, and what you do.
Yeah, so before launching DebtMD, I actually worked in the debt relief industry for 5 years, advising people as to how to get out of debt, predominantly with credit cards, medical bills, or student loans. So after doing that for 5 years, I began to realize that the real issue is that these people were stressed out, they're under time constraints to find a solution, and they're misinformed as to what their best option is to become debt-free. So that got me thinking, you know, how could I improve this situation, make it easier for people in debt to find a solution? And that's when I thought of the idea for DebtMD, which DebtMD is a platform that connects people with loan companies, credit counselors, debt settlement companies. Eventually, we're going to have bankruptcy attorneys, informs the user on each option so they can choose the best one with confidence. Because like I said, you know, I've seen, you know, financial literacy is a very big issue, especially today with what's going on. If people don't know, you know, which option to do, what's best for their situation, they're going to end up choosing the wrong option. And a lot of times that'll put them in a worse off financial situation. So we basically just want to inform people, this is what you should do, what you shouldn't do. And then hopefully, you know, they make the right decision and, you know, can start a new life without debt.
So why the MD? Are you like
the dead? It's supposed to be a rub off like WebMD.
Yeah,
it has that ring to it. So we're like the debt doctor, you know. So that's where that is.
Okay. So anyone who needs their debt fixed or healed, I guess.
Correct.
DebtMD.com and take a look at it.
Yep.
I like that. It's interesting. I have so many more questions for you, but guess what? I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest to the conversation so I can get in depth and start asking all of my questions. We have Lydia Fayel. She is the head of growth and marketing at Workstream.us. Good morning, Lydia. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
You are so welcome.
But yeah, so I am at Workstream, which is based in San Francisco. We are a hiring platform, a mobile app. We help companies hire hourly workers. And so when it comes to posting to job boards, you think about how complicated it is now with literally tens of thousands of job boards out there. We, you know, integrate with everything so you can do it with one click. We help people get hired faster, which is especially important right now, given, you know, the high unemployment rates. So as soon as you apply, you immediately get a text message back from the employer to really start the process and start, you know, like getting into people's calendars to do virtual Zoom interviews. And one of the things I'm really excited about right now is we're also helping people through the Work Opportunity Tax Credit Program, people who have had difficulty getting jobs in the past. We're promoting WOTC as a way for employers to also get tax credits by hiring people from those groups. So it's something that benefits both people who have struggled to find work and also helps employers who are trying to get back on their feet after all of the COVID-19 closures. But yeah, so that's Workstream, and yeah.
I love it. So let me just ask you this. What have you seen over the last 3 months? I know there are plenty of people who've been losing their jobs. Have you seen that people just said, you know what, there's no way I'm going to find a job. I won't even try. Or you have more people that say, you know what, I have to find something.
So we've seen a wide spectrum. You know, we work with over 5,000 hiring managers across a lot of different industries. One thing that we've seen is that people who are going out for delivery hire jobs, for instance, because we work with a lot of, you know, companies hiring delivery drivers, that they're just seeing a surge in applicants, like 5 times the number of people applied in the month of April than in the month of, in the month of May than in April. Mm-hmm. And in some states, especially down south, like 14 times as many people were applying to the same position. Mm-hmm. That being said, some companies, some businesses have had a really hard time hiring because one, there's reopening in the same city pretty much at the same time, and everyone's sort of struggling to rehire at the same time. And they're also having a hard time to contend with some of the unemployment benefits that are available because people have, you know, the option to stay on unemployment. And if they're going back to a restaurant or other company that's where a lot of their, earnings come from tips, and they're not seeing those anymore, there's less of a benefit for them to go back to that work. So there are a lot of sort of struggles on both sides, both finding jobs and then also finding people who are ready to go back right now. And you know, the lack of childcare because schools are still out is a whole nother problem for them.
Yes, one of the things that I noticed that with the second stimulus bill coming up for consideration, one of the questions is about the $600 in additional for unemployment and whether or not to continue it, because many people make more money at home on unemployment than they would if they would go back to work. Have you seen that play into it?
Yeah, we've heard a lot of that from the employers that we work with. And so what we've had to do is build quite a few additional sort of screening questions. Mm-hmm. So as soon as somebody applies, they get a text message link that has a few screening questions. So mm-hmm. that way the employers can understand whether or not they are genuinely interested in the position or if they are fulfilling what they need to in terms of the number of applications they've sent out in order to be able to remain on unemployment. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, there's just like a sort of more ways to gauge how interested somebody is versus them just like clicking like easy apply on some job sites.
But I love the way you handle it. There's, you know, almost an aspect of, I just kind of think in doTERRA, one of the things I do is doTERRA essential oils. I love my essential oils. When I finish a show and I need to come down, I'm like, oh, where are my oils? But there's a joke that we always say is there's an oil for that. And so when I keep hearing you refer back to the app, it's almost like, oh yeah, there's an app for that, you know, because you look at the problem, you look at the situation and you plan into the whole process, the question, so that you can take all these different things into account. I think that's kind of what Holly Jean was talking about. So I'm gonna go back to Holly Jean real quick and building certain things into the processes and procedures. Is that something that you work with your clients to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're not building your business online, another way you build it is through hiring employees. And mm-hmm. so right now having perks and additional things, which is challenging, is really important. So it's more for most of the people I'm working with, it's mentorship and investing in professional development for rehiring staff and showing them the roadmap to success so that they're more likely to come on board. They see it's a long-term commitment versus just staying on unemployment. So showing them the excitement of the experience you're creating for your employees is really, really important right now. And just like Lydia was sharing, making sure you're qualifying your leads for employment, making sure they're genuinely interested. It's so easy to hire people that might have just the hard skills for the role, but it's really hard to train on the soft skills. So it's typically most important that you're really clear on the business values and the soft skills you're looking to retain in employees. And that's what you want to hire for.
Can I jump in here?
Absolutely.
No, I was going to, because Holly was talking about soft skills. Like now that most people are working remotely, are those going to be like, I don't want to say out the window, but are those going to be diminished? Because everyone's, you know, I know, at least from the people I know, like 80% of them are working from home. So like, how does that affect it?
I think it means your soft skills are even more important.
Yeah.
Having amazing communication skills has never been more essential than it is today. You have to bump up your energy levels when you're in an online forum like this. Mm-hmm. So for people to see that you're energized and excited, it's a very different experience. Being excellent at speaking, modulating your voice, understanding how to have different tonality in your voice so that you can connect and attract people online is so key. Getting really creative on your customer experience online versus, you know, not online. Team development. Can you imagine doing team development only online? I think we're going to have to get really creative. Companies are going to have to be really resourceful and probably still have co-sharing facilities and allowing employees to work remotely, but having a combination of that with in-person things, because you can't replace in-person altogether. It's really important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're socially oriented animals. We crave security and connection. This online experience we've all been thrown into is first off, think about it, it's absolutely exhausting to the human brain. It's we're all zoomed out, if you will, because we're not picking up on the proper cues and clues, and because we are challenged. You think about even with what we're doing this morning, where you have to look, how it feels, et cetera. And we love to be socially connected, and the online experience doesn't meet all of those needs. So we'll push ourselves back to some of this, you know, in person, but I totally agree with the other Holly. All Hollies are brilliant, by the way.
A little biased, are we? But
okay. Yeah, just a little. What we often call soft skills are actually the harder skills to develop and to become truly competent at. And imagine, you know, giving tough feedback to someone over a Zoom call.
Yeah.
It's 10 times more challenging. So this is going to be a mixed bag and continue to be that for some time. You know, we'll never spring completely back to where we were, I don't think. As a behavioral scientist, that's highly unlikely. But we will spring back some.
I think there's going to be a big combination. There is nothing like assessing a mother and a baby and touching and feeling in real person. And what my colleagues and I have had to learn to do is to communicate with the parents that we're Zooming with, how to palpate certain things and how to work, you know, how to use their hands. And we have to be very clear in our communication. So I think it's going to translate later when we're back face to face. And it's also going to help us to continue maybe reaching those people that don't have access far away. It's been a bummer, but it's been a really incredible learning experience for most of us. And my husband's thrilled to be back in the office this week of working from home.
So, I mean, for me, it's my hope that when we come out of this, because I worked in tech for a long time and I used to have to do this 2-hour commute each way, which is insane. So I'm hoping that we have some kind of solution where we're not requiring all employees to work in the office, especially with the crazy commutes in California and lots of other states. Yeah. But I do hope that they've come up with some kind of like payout or stipend for employees to work in co-sharing facilities that are close to their homes. And then they have, you know, monthly or quarterly team gatherings so that they can reutilize their corporate real estate. I do think that stages and conferences need to come back, networking, because we are human and like what drives us is in-person connection. But I think that the in-person connection might shift if we're really smart and we learn from this situation so that we are like helping the environment. We are helping our sanity and not having these crazy commute times. So I'm hoping it's a really creative new world after this.
I definitely agree. No, Lydia, one of the things, I think your industry is one of those industries that has seen a lot of changes as far as the interview process. You know, before you always, if you had an interview, you went to the company, you went to the job, you sat down and you did your interview. Now you can't do an interview. So people are doing interviews via Zoom. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that this will be more of a permanent change to your industry?
I think at least as the first interview stage goes, I think, you know, now more people are comfortable using Zoom. We're also seen as a stage people ask to submit a 30-second intro video of themselves, which goes back to that concept of how do you know who's really interested in you know, coming off unemployment right now and ready to go back to the workforce. So that, you know, those two things I see as a permanent change. I think that a definite permanent change is going to be that training materials are going to be much more recorded and, you know, sent via, you know, via phone, so you can access them, you know, as a text message. Like, you know, we do that really easily. So we're just seeing a huge pickup in that. They're building them for what's going on right now with coronavirus. And I don't see companies giving up their video training materials anytime soon. And their, you know, embedded slide share with quizzes. I think that they're realizing that this is actually a great time saver for them as far as the training process goes.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that. Now, I wanted to go back to Leanne real quick when you were discussing the whole lactation process. One, this is not obviously an industry that I follow. My children are 23 and 26, so I put that, you know, way behind me. But the thing that I've seen in the media, in the news, is the whole, you know, should people be allowed to breastfeed in public? Should they not? Should they have certain guidelines? Like, you can't just sit down in the middle of a restaurant? Or what has been the main topics or focus for this aspect?
Well, you're going to hear my side of the story. Babies need to eat and they should not be sequestered. If you're going to sit down in a restaurant and eat, just eat. If you don't want to look at a breast, don't look at a breast. And people are not stripping. They're for the most part dressing appropriately. If I don't even want to say that, use that word. It seems disempowering, but like to send people off to a bathroom or to some dirty place to feed their baby is disgusting. And it's disempowering and it's going to lower breastfeeding rates. That's what it does. I will never forget when I had my third child. I was at a public, I live in New York City, in the East Village. My kids were at a public elementary school. I was an experienced lactation consultant, experienced mother. It was one of those days that I had three kids and I got them to school on time. And it was like, woo, I'm a hero. And I sat down in the lobby because my son was hungry and I fed him. And this woman says, you can't do that. And I don't know who she's talking to. And I hear, you can't do that. And I was like, are you talking to me? And she said, you can't do that here. There are children here. And I looked at her. I walked over with my baby on my breast because she was a security guard. And I said, most of these children were breastfed. They need to know what breasts are. And I said, and you are disempowering me. And if I was a young mother, you would have ruined my breastfeeding experience. And I kind of like, it was in a school where there are children and people aren't so afraid of breast unless they're selling cars and beer that, I mean, it's true. Like a breast is like, oh, babies, get them out of there. Don't let me see it. But like, it's just how you feed your baby. And we need to desensitize. You look at the advertising on TV. You just see big push-up bras and when people get breast implants, it looks like an engorged breast. If you've never had milk in your breast that got too full, it's uncomfortable. And that's what implants look like. It looks like you're engorged. Mm-hmm. So I feel strongly that that people have the right to breastfeed wherever they have a right to be. Mm-hmm. That's that, you know, if you want to sequester them, you gotta rethink this world that you're living in and rethink yourself. Like, do you like, and then people say, well, she can just pump and put it in a bottle. Pumping doesn't work for every baby. Pumping doesn't work for every mother, and not all babies like bottles, and it's not always convenient. The most convenient thing when you're with your baby is to put the baby on the boob when they're hungry. There's nothing easier. There's no waste. Talk about the environment. There's no waste in that. It's the right temperature. It's you know, again, I could go on.
It's good, but I can see when you were reliving that whole experience, how you were just reliving it. Like you were feeling it. You were emotional. You were there.
I went home and I cried. And like, all I kept thinking was, I was an experienced, I'm somebody who goes and empowers people. If I go home and cry about that, there's somebody who's a new first-time mom who maybe is, you know, it doesn't even matter her age, but I'm thinking somebody in their 20s and early 30s is gonna go, well, I guess I can't breastfeed. I'm not gonna do it. And it's gonna just destroy them.
I love when people are passionate about anything, especially what they do and what their career is. But when someone's passionate, I always kind of assume to a certain extent there's a story. You know what I mean? Like, how did you wind up being a lactate somebody, you know, how did you get here? How did you start?
Well, when I was not breastfed and, you know, whatever, that's fine. But when I was pregnant with my first baby, I remember thinking, oh yeah, I should breastfeed my sister-in-law. I had breastfed my niece. And I had this baby shower that wasn't mine. And my oldest is going to be 25 next month. And so this is 25 years ago. I didn't register for anything. I got this baby shower. And I come home and I open everything. And I had 36 bottles. And I didn't have a dishwasher. And I'm like, I have to wash all those? I don't want to wash those. So that was the first. That was the beginning. It was like, I don't want to wash dishes. I still don't have a dishwasher. I don't. But then when I had my baby, I'd always wanted to have a baby. Like, just that, like, I, from the minute I was born, I was going to have a baby. And then when I had my baby, I didn't realize that everybody else wants your baby too. And it might sound selfish, and it wasn't. I don't know how many of you have children, but when you have a baby, everything is just so raw and emotional. Everybody wanted to hold my baby. And so I had to share her, but I always got to feed her, because when she was hungry, I was feeding her. And then I learned that through my sister-in-law that there were different support groups. So I ended up going to a La Leche League meeting. And found, like, it was the first time that I showed up where people said, oh, you're doing a great job. Instead of, your baby's that big, are you breastfeeding her? You're not giving her formula. Are you sure? How long are you going to do that? Are you going to do that here? Are you going to feed her again? All the questions. And I showed up at this place and these people were just like, you're doing a great job. And I was just, it was the first time, I think she was 5 or 6 weeks old, that I could relax and just be with my baby and trust my instincts. And then some of the other people, so I became a La Leche League leader and started helping people because I wanted that help. And then I noticed that some of my co-leaders were really smart. They knew more. They were lactation consultants. And I said, this is what I want to do. Babies, people, not the same thing. I'm not working in an office. I do home visits. I do support groups. It's like, it's my jam.
I love it. I can see how a new mom, especially with Theo, having you show up. That's so amazing. Now, and I want to go
just
ahead.
And I just want to say, like, sometimes we get a bad rap as like, oh, we're anti-formula. We are not. I just need to speak for my people. Our goal is to support families and getting their babies fed the way that works for them. And if they're coming to us, the assumption is that they want to breastfeed. Mm-hmm. So for however long, you know, so we support families and we empower the world and we try to, like, educate the world. That's why I turn every conversation in a cocktail party into breastfeeding, so I can educate.
I love it.
People are shocked. They're like, about every aspect of breastfeeding.
We definitely have learned a lot, but breastfeeding, some people associate it with better brain power. They have children breastfeed, then their brains are better. We were talking earlier with Holly Jean about her brain injury and some of the things she learned about food associated with that brain energy. Did you want to share, Holly Jean?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a cyclist. And so when I had my concussion, all my friends assumed it was from cycling, and it was not. I had the flu for just a day, which is pretty crazy, especially with what's happening in the world today. And because I have a really sensitive vasovagal nerve, I blacked out just walking back from the bathroom to my bedroom in the middle of the night. And I fell on my face on a concrete floor, and I had stitches in my chin, almost broke my jaw. I have some damage here, and I hit the frontal lobe of my brain. We went to the emergency room, lost some part of my teeth. It was, like, really, really traumatic. And I will never forget, after being evaluated, they said it was a mild concussion. So I went home and I was okay for a few days. And then I started getting daily migraines and daily nausea and feeling really overwhelmed. and I eventually went and found a neurologist. This continued for another 7 months. I was unable to work for 7 months. I've played piano for over 25 years at the time, and I tried to play a simple song I've known for decades, and I couldn't do it. So if you just think about driving, it's really hard. Like, there's a lot of things that your brain does that we take for granted, and I couldn't drive for 7 months. I chose to not drink alcohol for a year because I wanted my brain to have the best opportunity for recovering and healing. I was immediately after my injury naturally craving high fat foods that were healthy, like avocados and fish and eggs. So I listened to my body and I ate that. And then I did a lot of research, and there's a company, a nonprofit called Love Your Brain. I worked with them and learned more about brain and recovery. I took the time off of work for 7 months. I also ended up getting my yoga teacher training 200-hour credential during this so that I could work on stress and anxiety management, because I wasn't sure that my life would ever be the same. I was so cognitively impaired for that period of time that, and I've worked in tech and corporate and as an executive leader, and I thought I'd never get back to that place. It was one of the most scary things I've ever faced. And I will say I fully recovered, but it took that full year. And so for anybody out there that has a mild concussion, any brain injury is serious, and make sure you give yourself plenty of time and compassion to heal from that.
Holly G, can I just interject? On March 15th of this year, I had a vagal response, and I was visiting family in a hotel in Pennsylvania and fell and broke my neck basically. And it was a fractured vertebrae. And so I went through, I had to have emergency surgery. I coded in the emergency room. I was in rehab for a while, and I'm off my neck brace now for about 2 weeks. But yeah, so, and some of the effects of that, just the nerve damage that's pretty much healed, is still linger. So I luckily did not have concussion, but I had a similar experience, and I'm sorry that you went through that. Scary. Oh,
thank you. Yeah, I find that because I work on the healing side too. I'm working with an energy healer now because I found that there's a lot of traumas that happen in our bodies, and if we don't really fully process them, especially energetically, which might be too out there for some people. But it's one of the things that's been really transformative, was really healing, releasing those emotions and the traumas, because things like breaking your neck, having a spinal fusion, having a concussion, they impact your body, and our bodies are really smart.
Yes. Holly Green, some of the people that you work with, one of the things that you mentioned is you help entrepreneurs and business leaders learn to love their life again. So what type of space are they usually in when they come to work with you? And what are some of the things that you work on?
Which Holly were you?
I think you have us mixed
Holly,
up.
Yeah. That's Holly.
That's Holly Green. Am I off?
Yeah, that's the other Holly's.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm too much. Okay. Leveraging your brain and the brains of others to be more successful. Talk to us a little bit about that, Holly Green.
Well, I work with leaders and organizations, as well as associations and elite performers well outside the workplace, in really getting crystal clear on what winning or success or excellence is to them and their teams, and then executing towards that. So we use techniques and tips, the way the brain really works. We are irrational, illogical creatures. There is no question or doubt about that. That we have validated a million times with the adult human. And so we use that to help people manipulate themselves and others, and manipulate. It's funny to me that people oftentimes have a negative perception. It just means to shape or form or mold, you know, into a desired form. And that's what we do, so that we help leaders connect with and lead and manage and execute to what, however they define the win in for themselves and their organizations. So I do a lot of strategic agility work, a lot of leadership development work, in really helping teams get to where they want to go. And I learned this from elite players, initially from Top Gun fighter pilots, in how they're trained and how they think and how they're able to accomplish, and then went on to work with our United States Navy SEALs, Olympic athletes, musicians, people who are unquestionably the best at what they do. And really being able to tease out what do those elite players in other sectors do so we can use it at work. Because you and I are not going to be Navy SEALs. We're going to spend most of our life working. We might as well be damn good at it and really enjoy it. And so that's what we help others accomplish.
What are some of the commonalities between those top executives and the Navy SEALs? What is their mindset?
Well, unquestionably driven. So ambitious, with a real desire to achieve. We do find in some sectors that the elite tend to be a little more open to learning what they don't know so that they can be the best. Sometimes when you have a very successful business person, we want to hold on to those mental pathways we have, whatever got us here. We want to keep using it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes in the work world, that notion of changing ourselves first before we can change and really lead effectively our organizations is a tough one. Mm-hmm. You know, the best leaders in the world are very self-aware and constantly unlearning. Mm-hmm. So we teach a lot about unlearning and how to create new pathways versus try to use the same one. You know, you've said it 1,000 times probably. You know someone who does the same thing over and over expects a different result, or someone who has the same bad relationship in their life over and over. We are constructed to actually work that way. So we have to unlearn some of that. And that's a huge challenge for the adult human, especially a successful adult human.
What have you seen? Because this is one of my favorite questions I like to ask my guests, is over this past 3 months with leaders, and you know, some the leaders are the ones that are on the front line that have to go out to the team, to the employees, yeah, and give them the everything is going to be okay speech. We're going to survive this. We're going to make it through. And then those leaders don't always have someone to go back to and say, you know what? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be okay? Are we going to be able to go through this pivot or this transition? And I'm pretty sure they would come and speak to someone like yourself. Have you seen that difference in these leaders?
Unquestionably, we're seeing a lot of extremes right now. You don't have a lot of people operating with balance. Mm-hmm. So we see the extreme of a leader who steps in, wants to do it all him or herself. Mm-hmm. Exhaust him or herself, then begins to check out, etc. So we've certainly seen that extreme. We've seen the extreme of a leader just really checking out, removing themselves, communicating less. We've seen the extreme of despair. I have clients who are on their third or fourth generation in their company that will be claiming bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. They've lost everything. And so, you know, I'm dealing with and working with just every kind of scenario you can imagine. The key right now, particularly as we go into kind of reboot mode, is to re-engage and refresh employees to understand that everybody's head is not in the same place as yours. You might be ready to dive back in and get to work and, you know, move forward, but different employees are in very different places on their change cycles. And the first 4 or 5 phases of our change cycle are negative. They're shock, denial, frustration, and anger. And when we get hit with wave after wave after wave of change and uncertainty, like we've had happen and continues to happen, it pushes us back to the beginning of the cycle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're on just layer after layer after layer of our very human negative response to change. It's not until we get to acceptance that we can integrate. And again, if I keep getting knocked back to the beginning, that's almost impossible to get through right now with the magnitude and the level of just massive upheaval and uncertainty and ambiguity in the world.
It seems like those cycles of grief, though. I mean, everything you just named seems,
yes. Okay. It is correlated directly. We go through in a change. It is grieving. We're leaving the old pathway. There's a reason we had the old pathway. We liked walking down the old pathway. And even if we didn't like it, it brought us a sense of comfort because mm-hmm. the brain digs what it is most familiar with. So when you begin to think about the human as we crave what we're familiar with, even if we complain about it, we crave it. So that's what kicks off the grief process in unexpected change. It's mm-hmm. a little different when it's our own change. Mm-hmm. Like we're going on vacation, that's our own change, right? Mm-hmm. Or we start a new job, that's our own change. Now there are cycles we go through there as well, but they're different than unexpected change.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the first lessons I had to learn as a business consultant early on, is because when I first started, I was like, I would talk to potential customers, potential clients, and they would be like, I hate my job. I hate my boss. I hate my commute. I hate everything. I don't have health insurance. I get a low wage. And they were like, I'm ready to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, yes, a new client. Let's go. Let's get started. Only to find out that these same clients are still at those same jobs, with those mm-hmm. same commutes, with those same coworkers and same bosses that they hate, because they really aren't ready and don't want to make that change. So they stay in that position, yeah. even though they have verbalized their complete dissatisfaction with it. And now, you know, 26 years later, after I started my, you know, I built my first website, I have the conversations, but I understand that everybody is not really ready mm-hmm. to make that change in their lives.
Yet we seek comfort at almost all cost as an adult human. It's part of that illogical, irrational creature that we are. We see it's like with James and dealing with debt, you know, those aren't logical decisions that were made, mm-hmm. but we do it anyway, you know, and then we validate why we made the decision. We validate and prove that we're right and that it's going to be okay somehow. And that wasn't our fault. And you know, those are just very normal sort of traits of the adult human. And unfortunately, for too long in the workspace, we've pretended like we're rational, logical creatures. If you go back and you read the work of Peter Drucker, who's, you know, a management guru in history, I'm convinced Peter Drucker never went to a real meeting with other humans, because humans don't show up on time. They're not prepared. They don't stay engaged. They're, you know, so-and-so's backstabbing so-and-so, so-and-so's withholding information. You know, that's just, and we've got to learn to work with what we are as creatures mm-hmm. and really take advantage of that and use that to be more incredible and to have a more positive effect on the world, instead of pretend that we're something that we're not. And that's what's really fascinating to me and why I got into this space, why I'm so incredibly passionate about it. Because we all have it in us. It is, though, a challenge at times to get us to leave those pathways that we know so well and create new ones. We have neuroplasticity. And that's the ability to create new pathways. We used to believe we did not have it, in mm-hmm. fact. And you talking about your brain injuries, both of you, our brain is astounding. It can rebuild and rework and re-knit new pathways, new synapses can occur. It's a phenomenal machine. We just have to know how to use it well to take advantage of it.
We just have to use it. We have to use our brains. That's what I try to do. That's why the show starts at 8. I invite the guests at 7:45, because I know humans, they're going to be late. Then I invite 5 people instead of 1 guest, because I know these humans, they flake. They don't show up. So like Lydia was talking about when we were having that discussion, is you just plan all those things in so that you allow for us to be us. So I want to move over to James real quick. One of the things that I have seen on a personal level with myself, as well as some of my friends and people I've talked to, that this is an excellent time to repair their credit. We talked about that unemployment, more people at home making more than when they went to a job, they have more money available. James, have you seen an increase or a decrease in people focused on their credit?
So, well, I guess there's 2 sides to it. You have the people who, like Lydia was saying, and with the 600 plus the regular state unemployment, they're making more money than they were when they were working. So that incentivizes them not, you know, to, for lack of a better word, milk that until they absolutely have to go to work. But then I'm in New Jersey. There, you know, our state's been one of the hardest hit from from COVID. A lot of people have, it's been since March where they filed for unemployment, but they still haven't even gotten it yet. So I can't even imagine people who have 2-3 kids who are already living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. and now they don't have any income for 3 months. It's really a it's terrible. It really is. So that's another issue. And, you know, just me thinking out loud, those people most likely, I would think, have to resort to credit cards just to, you know, for basic living expenses. But what the credit card companies, a lot of them are doing is for people like that, they're either lowering their credit limits or they're shutting down the credit cards completely. So at that point, yeah, it's awful. So not only is your credit score going to go down, you can't even charge your credit card to buy groceries or, you know, hand sanitizer, whatever you need to buy, you can't even buy it. So I really do feel for those people. So like I said, you know, it just depends on what specific situation you're in. You know, you have the people that have been getting the unemployment, or hopefully they still have their jobs. But then I could speak for New Jersey. I do know there's a bunch of people, probably at least, you know, because millions of people applied for unemployment, they can't handle it. So you have these people who are stuck in limbo, and it's really unfortunate. But yeah, so that's what's happening.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that. But I want to go back to my original question. But have you seen people who have the unemployment, or people in general, you know, think of it as a good time to pay off some of their debt?
Yeah,
because that's what I've been doing.
It is. No, it is. But most people, as right now, are hesitant to invest or spend their money. They want to save it in their you know, savings accounts. Mm-hmm. But now is a better time than ever to, you know, to pay off debt. You have this extra money coming in. And a rule of thumb is you should always pay off debt before doing anything else, because honestly, it puts you in a much better position financially down the road. You're going to raise your credit score, and, you know, it'll, you know, in the end with interest rates and whatnot, you'll save much more money in the long run if you have zero debt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Because one of the things, I don't know if it was right or wrong, but I just wanted to do it, is I started calling all my credit card companies because I didn't want credit debt. I didn't want debt anymore. And I wanted to pay off these credit cards. Yes. And so I just called all of them individually. I didn't know if there was I know online you can Google it and people will do it for you, but I just called them and asked them if there was a settlement amount.
Yes.
And settled all my accounts.
And all it takes is a one phone call and ask them nicely. And a lot of times, believe it or not, they'll be willing to work with you. If not, you know, maybe not lower the principal, but there a lot of times they'll lower the interest rate for you, which will help a lot. So, you know, and you're talking about credit card debt. That's the number one debt where I'd say it's the most toxic type of debt, because you're looking at on average like 19% interest rate. And if you don't really hone in and take care of that, before you know it, you're going to be spending thousands, and the balance is never going to go down. So that's, if you have credit card debt, anyone or friends, a family, whoever, make sure you pay that off. The first thing you do is pay that off.
I've always wondered, with the credit card settlements, I mean, you see that on the, you know, just like advertisements and whatnot. Does that affect your credit score?
It does. So a lot of times they're going to tell you, stop paying your credit card for 6 months. You owe $10,000, and they're going to accept, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000. So on your credit report for, I think it's up to like 7 years, it's going to say settled for less than full balance. So say when you go get a car loan or a mortgage, and they're going to obviously do a credit check, they're going to see this. You'll probably still be able to get financing for those things, but obviously it doesn't look good. And you're not going to get the best terms on a mortgage or a car loan. So yeah, it does, you know, it'll resolve your debt. It's going to ding your credit score, but it is going to take a little time to recover from it.
And does asking them to lower your interest rate, that?
No, that usually, because you're still keeping up with the payments, that's more of a thing, like that won't affect your credit score. It's only where you owe $20,000, the principal, and you pay $10,000, that's where it'll really affect your credit score. But in terms of interest rates, that won't affect you.
Paying it, even settling it, isn't that better than having late payments or outstanding debt to just get it paid off?
Yeah. So settling, typically, like from my understanding, when you settle, they want you to, like, you really show that you cannot pay it back before they lower your principal balance. So that means if you're settling it, you're probably already 2-3 months late at least on your, so that's going to affect your credit score. Mm-hmm. But if you work directly with the company, as opposed, there's a lot of like companies, and you got to be careful who say they're going to do that for you, and you get into a worse situation. But a lot of times, if you want to settle, you have to be late. That's the catch 22.
Yes, I know, because that's one of the reasons I've been going out. I started my $50,000 production fundraiser on Facebook. I also have a fundraiser on ifundwoman.com, because the coronavirus has hit asharifa.com very hard. So I'm working on ways to be able to rectify and resolve and improve my business as well as my personal life. Now, we've been talking today. It is 8:57. I usually don't go this long. I usually wait about 8:50 to allow everybody to have their final moments. So briefly today, people, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask my guests to do. And to, that's just to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is listening live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archives. And please briefly let them know what you would like for them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Leanne.
Well, I would like everyone to support breastfeeding. When you see somebody breastfeeding, don't give them a sneer, give them a thumbs up and say you're doing a great job. Or if you're not comfortable doing that, just ignore them. But empower, do not disempower new families.
Love it. Lydia?
I just want to say, for anyone who's listening out here, who's a hiring manager or an employer, small business owner, that, you know, there are tools to help them, you know, check out workstream.us. We're providing free tools right now. So there's a lot of resources to help you find the right candidates and also like maximize the tax credits you can claim, so you can hopefully regain profitability despite everything that's going on in the world.
And there's an app for that.
Yeah, workstream.us, we have a mobile app as well. So yeah, there's lots of stuff to check out, but a lot of also just helpful resources and guides that you know, are free for anyone.
I love it. Check out workforce.us.
Or
workstream.us. I'm all off. I'm doing the wrong commercial. Y'all see I'm all over the place today. I done messed up with the Hollies, going overtime, running late. James.
Yeah, so with regard to what's going on now, obviously everyone's been impacted financially. I don't care how much money you make. We've all been affected. So now is more important time than ever. You know, I always like live within your means. So if you make $1 million or $100,000 or whatever, you need to spend less than that. And if you do have debt and you're not sure what to do with it, you check out debtmd.com. It's 100% free, and we can help you find a solution.
That's a commercial right there. Holly Green.
I just encourage everyone, visit thehumanfactor.biz. And if you go to the store, you'll find dozens of free tools on being a more incredible manager and leader. Additionally, if you go to my LinkedIn page or my Facebook page, you will find a free webinar that we did called Thinking and Thriving in Trying Times. And it helps you understand how you yourself can get through unexpected change successfully and how you can help others and recognize in others what phase they're in and prompt them to be even more incredible.
You are incredible. Thank you for sharing. And then we have Holly Jean.
Yes, if you're looking for support in your health, your clarity, or your business, check out hollyjeanjackson.com. And if you're looking for inspiration where the world feels very dark and changing constantly, I'm launching a podcast called Inspiration Contagion, because we need something to spread that's giving light to the world. And I'm interviewing transformational, incredible leaders. I'm launching June 16th with 10 amazing influencers across health, clarity, and business. And their stories are phenomenal. So if you're looking for a little extra mojo or inspiration, check that out at inspirationcontagion.com.
I love it. And so when you get ready to go to season two, I want to get Sharifa Hardy's name on that list so I can share my incredible. And if I do say so myself, my story is incredible. So
I'd love to have you on the show.
I have to get on your list. But everyone, I want to thank you for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And to everyone who is watching this show live, didn't I tell you Our guests are amazing. We learned so much. We learned about credit, what we're doing. We learned about lactation, our brains, our businesses. And you know what? The best ways to find a job, all in 1 hour. I tell you, I love what I do. I love my life. I love my show. I love the Roundtable Talk Show. And guess what? I love all of you. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for watching the show live, but please go ahead and share this show and support our guests. Visit their websites, check out what they have going on, and when you speak to them, please tell them Sharifa Hardy says hi. Until tomorrow, everyone have a safe and a blessed day, and if you're interested in being a guest, visit the website at AskSharifa.com. Bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
Take care.